Presenter this morning is Kathy Sykes. Kathy serves as the senior advisor for the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's Aging Initiative, and she is also, very importantly for this organization, co-chair of the APHA Healthy Communities for Healthy Aging Forum. So it's a pleasure to welcome Kathy.
Thank you, and I will say that the Healthy Aging Forum is now part of the Aging and Public Health section, and we have an endowed symposium every year now in this section, which was excellent if you have a chance to go see it. So first, I have no relationships to disclose, and I am actually presenting a paper by my colleague from EPA, who's with the Office of Research and Development, Thomas McCurdy. So first, hopefully, I have that modeling exposures and intake doses in the 65 population. This is really for anyone who knows about pharmacokinetics and pharmacodynamics. Exposure is important for the length of time you're exposed, and it's location dependent. Pollution is highly variable and to both time and space. But the dose rate determines, again, how much pollution gets in through your system through many different venues. And that the chemical and physical composition of the pollution, for instance, particulate matter is not just one particulate. Lots of things attached to it, and it's very different in the West Coast versus the East Coast. And how the body physiologically processes through ADME changes how this material will be metabolized, transported, and deposited in the body. And the toxicological impacts determine subsequent health effects. So these are just some of the hazards, but today I'm going to be talking about indoor and outdoor air pollutants, in other words, air pollution. And I think it's really relevant from the previous speaker, since this is something, if you are living in the United States, this is relevant for you, breathing. And if you also notice the first four disease groups that had to do with cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and so forth, air pollution is really important. If you have no risk factors, the fact that you live and breathe, you've got the background issue that puts you at risk during certain times. I'll just show another, this is really determined, waterborne pathogens, and just showing again with age the changes in deaths caused from exposure. But now, starting with the World Health Organization, I just want to show how this is a world phenomenon. And I know we touched on climate, and I would just say climate change has some huge weather. There's weather, there's weird weather, which is maybe the better name for climate change. But here are predictions from the World Health Organization on premature death due to air pollution. So in 1997, we had nearly 700,000 deaths. But by 2020, 8 million avoidable deaths are predicted worldwide. And this is just a visual picture of what a particulate matter little particle looks like in comparison to a grain of sand on the beach, a little flour speck in your bakery or your mom's kitchen or your dad's kitchen, and then a particle that's 2.5 microns. And I think someone asked about the mechanism on the cognitive, the neurological pathways, and I think the hypothesis about air pollution is that, the Framingham study looked about heart rate variability, and that apparently these are so small, it just doesn't just go into the respiratory tract, but it also gets down into the blood, which goes through your whole body, and it changes the heart rate variability. There have been lots of studies done, tons of research, and I'm not an expert, but I can tell you EPA and NIEHS have devoted tons of meta-analyses using CMS data and so forth to look at this, and this has happened worldwide too, that there are correlations when there's a lot of air pollution and people who end up dying prematurely. They're also the justification for our regulations, so we have to thank old people that have justified the cost-benefit analyses for protecting air quality for everyone. This is in the Interagency Forum on Aging-Related Statistics. EPA is one of the partners, and believe it or not, another kind of thing about the life course, even the federal government separates families and children from elders, which is crazy, but we do have two statistics, and a key indicator of well-being has to do with air pollution. And the reason we do this, not just because of the major chronic conditions that are affected by air pollution, and we know so much about it, but also because it's the one that we have the best standard, the gold standard for. It's really the information about, we have air quality monitors around population, And as you can see, over years, the good news is we've had fewer people, and this is actually, you could have this for people of all ages, not just 65 and over, that live in counties with poor air quality. So there's the National Ambient Air Quality Standards that deal with lead and other things, but the two that are most important for people of all ages, but again for older people, are ozone and particulate matter. And ozone is an issue in the summer with sunlight, although I did hear some interesting studies during cold periods too that they found cases or measured ozone. But particulate matter is a problem year-round. It penetrates buildings, so you can't really get away from it. So again, having worked at NIOSH, when you can engineer out the problem, you don't have to deal with the problem. The best thing we can do for public health is really support standards that protect us, and that's from coal-fired power plants, and also trying to see how we can get away from driving a lot. Where you live really matters. This is the most recent data, and we're updating this interagency form on aging-related statistics this next year. We'll be coming out with the new data from 2010. And I can only show you that the coast, and it's where we have lots of population, lots of driving, coal-fired power plants. But if you live in any of those states that are dark, you live in a county that has had poor air quality at least for one day. There's a whole formula that had poor air quality where you were probably at risk. So where you live matters, where you're exposed matters. Now, the dose rate is associated with what you do, okay? So for airborne pollutants, the intake dose rate is highly correlated with your breathing rate, okay? And the changes that happen in our body over time as we age, when we're young, you know, makes a huge difference. It also is dependent on the activities, specific things that we do, and they can vary by a factor of 10. So that may have some I think some of the hypotheses that Ken had on what was happening in the winter and excessive exercise is probably one of the things that could have explained it, although I think the Poisson distribution and whether everyone's in there is another question. But the differential between the maximum breathing rate and its resting breathing rate is called the breathing rate reserve, and it decreases with age, with increasing age, about 1 to 2% per year. Okay. And I think if you saw Ed Massaro's slide, you know, he was showing Nathan Schock's work, where all the systems, as we age, go down, and the only thing they didn't plot was hypertension that went up. The first that drops off is the breathing. So, and the reserve, again, is dependent on age, gender, and lifestyle. And I would also say where you live. So here's some examples of medium breathing rate reserve in the elderly or older adults. And this is looking at people from about 65 to 75 years of age. You can see the male and female, normal, healthy people. And we know after Patricia's presentation, we've been exposed to everything and even a lot of stuff we don't know. So I'm not sure that anyone healthy, but healthier maybe. And you can see with women, you know, and this has to do with how you breathe per minute. So it's higher rates for men than women. Sedentary people have even lower rates. And then athletes have very high rates, okay? So these are, again, and as he's got as an asterisk too, these are highly variable depending on the conditions. And what we spend doing time on, and I've got some slides showing the time use survey that's part of the interagency forum on aging-related statistics too. On an average day, random day, this is people keeping diaries, what are you doing? What percent of your time are you spending doing whatever? So traveling, it's about 72%. Cleaning your house, about 33%. Working or volunteering, 18%. Physical activity, 18%. And sleeping, because we do sleep for about 8 hours or so. So that's one way of looking at it. Here's what's in the interagency forum booklet, again, showing how we spend our time. And, of course, what we're doing when we're awake, watching TV. And this is an issue for people of all ages, too. If you've seen No Child Left Inside, you know, getting them away from computers and TV is critical, too. And, of course, on the socializing, communicating, and actually the people who've been working very hard on getting elders involved in community and civic engagement. I've been working on the environment part. You know, I think this is, you know, a group that we should look for as a resource as well, not just a vulnerable population, to actually work on the public policy issues and advocating for healthy environments for all. Okay, so spending time in a motor vehicle. Again, women versus men, the differences you can see, and the miles traveled. And again, there's been a whole bunch of research that's been done on relationships between stress and being in cars with, we don't really understand the mechanisms, but again, premature death. Maybe it's from the exhaust from the car sitting in traffic, stress, maybe it's multi factors. But we also know that, I don't know how many of you saw the Lancet article a couple years ago that talked about the health dividend when we reduce carbon emissions and actually then reduced climate change at the same time, that they're really, if we can change the way we live, if we can change the built environment, how we get around in our community, even the quality of life, we can make a difference on all of these things. So I'm kind of intertwined. I'm bringing up high-level things with the little data here, too. So that there's been a lot of epi literature and hypothesized mechanisms. The expected benefits of physical activity, if we exercise, it's supposed to prevent or slow osteoporosis, frailty, reducing falls, which is a huge issue that actually Rick Fortinsky is one of the experts on here. It slows reduction in aerobic power and muscle loss. It reduces angina and heart disease, decreases hypertension. And the unexpected benefits, I won't go through everything, is that it reduces sick days, prevents or delays the onset of diabetes. It reduces the risks of breast cancer, prostate, colon, and rectal cancer. It reduces the risk of cognitive impairment, Alzheimer's and dementia, which was touched on in the second hand, and tobacco smoke. And it improves the quality of life and reduces depression. If that isn't a panacea, for dealing with chronic diseases, the non-communicable diseases, I don't know what is. But that's really, and there's been a lot of study with Jim Salas and others looking at physical activity increases in basically how we design the communities, whether it makes it more amenable to the sidewalks are there, the place seems safe, the lighting is good, and so forth. So to reduce the impacts of environmental pollutants in your daily life, first I'd say support the US EPA and the regulations that protect all of us. Fight against people who are looking at industry to say it's too costly when we're actually going to be paying for what I would say is full employment of the public health sector when we do die prematurely from all of the things that we're not taking care of. So there's a cost. That's the job, full job creation for the healthcare community when we don't support environmental standards. So exposures, again, reducing time, and that's kind of, I'm doing this in jest, but I'm serious. reducing time spent in polluted environments, and if you're poor and you can't leave it, you're stuck there if you live in LA. they also talked about never using the fresh air vent and, when you're stuck in traffic, you're just supposed to use the vent. And I also think indoor air pollution and the things that, the candles and the scented ones are really not great. There's a huge issue on climate change, too, on the indoor gas, the cooking stoves and fireplaces. Again, you've got particulate matter from those exposures. And then even if exposed, reduce intake dose rate when possible. So yoga, when it's really bad days. And understand the potential pollution solution situation in your home, indoor and outdoor sources. And then, again, physical activity is so critical. I guess you guys would all know about that. And I will say that, you love this stuff. But anyway, life's journey is not to arrive at the grave safely in a well-preserved body, but rather to skid in sideways, totally worn out, shouting, holy moly, what a ride. So you can get involved in issues. And the last thing I wanted to show you is that we have worked very hard at translating the research that has been done into practical information for caregivers and older adults. We have 9 on chronic conditions. You can see heart disease and COPD and asthma, water, diabetes. They've been translated into 17 languages. We have them also written at the 5th grade reading level. They are free on our website. We have a website where you can order hard copies. I'm fighting the digital divide for people who don't have access to the computer, that we need to continue to print them. They're easy to understand. They've been used. My colleague at EPA, we're going to be working on a cardiovascular campaign to raise awareness during the Wear Red Month about the Green Heart, the Air Quality Index, and being aware of environmental contaminants that can actually, shorten your life or harm people who have heart disease and diabetes and metabolic syndrome and so forth. So I'll just say this is a resource you can have. If you haven't signed up and have an interest in a monthly listserv, I encourage you to do so. And I will say, I wish EPA had done this. I'm so proud of the work that Ted Shetler, Jill Stein, the Physicians for Social Responsibility, and Peter Wilk is here in the audience with the organizations that does tremendous work. We should have done this at EPA or NIEHS. They did it. They've done it. There's copies in the back. And I also will do a plug for a conference that's going to be happening in New York with the Collaborative Health and the Environment, AARP, EPA, and many other NGOs and children's and aging groups. That's going to be in New York for a day and a half, and we're trying to start a movement on focusing on the life courses, looking at the systems, the food system, the chemical system, the TSCA reform, the things that we need to address, as well as the built environment. What did I miss? The natural environment, getting people out. And we're going to do it through arts and have fun. But I really think, you know, these are the big things that matter. We're on this earth for a short time. And I really think that this is the group, APHA members, that, you know, I think really do care. And I think we have to look at the, you know, the big picture and how we can help change something that affects the well-being for all of us and for generations to come. Thank you.